Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. No special announcements or show notes up front, so let's go ahead and dive on in. So as you know, faith and trust in traditional American institutions are on the decline. And while most people are not surprised by this, the social elite, the political elites on the left seem to be surprised that faith in them is on the decline. Apparently, they never read the story of the boy who cried wolf, where it turns out that the more you lie to people and the more you get caught lying to people, the less they tend to trust you. The more they tend to just dismiss everything that you have to say because they know you have a history of lying. And the political left has borrowed on the credibility of traditionally supported American institutions, the CDC and the FBI, in order to lie to the American people, to try and harass and strip us of our rights, and then they continue to get caught repeatedly. We see that faith in the CDC has been vastly declined, considering all the lies, misinformation, and disinformation that they have put out regarding COVID-19 in order to justify draconian lockdowns and trying to justify the government, trying to say they have the right to inject you with whatever needle they want to inject you with. We see that faith in the FBI has been on the decline because the FBI has been weaponized against political opponents of the left to target and harass parents, to be able to target political campaigns that challenge Democrat nominees. And then they've been caught lying about what they were doing, and they got caught knowing that what they were investigating was a complete and total bullcrap. But of the institutions of the United States that have lost trust among the American people, no institution has lost more trust than that of the American media. And that was highlighted on Hill TV's show, The Rising, who, yeah, they had to replace the host of The Rising after the previous host left and started their own show. But they do point out about the decline in faith in media. Take a look.
A sobering new poll from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism at Oxford finds that out of 46 countries, the United States ranks dead last when it comes to trust in media. According to the poll, only 29% of Americans trust what they're being told by news outlets.
Just last month, Batya Ungar-Sargon joined us to give her take on why mainstream news is alienating to audiences. Let's watch some of that.
Today you have liberal media that's really completely geared at getting an audience of the top 10% of liberals. And then you have conservative media that does manage to get working class American viewers by not insulting their values, right? But is really catering to the top 5% of Republicans. And you have nobody who's partisan on behalf of the millions and millions of lower middle class, working class, and poor Americans who's speaking to their issues.
Now, what I find interesting about that clip, what I find hilarious, is that while they're going off and trying to provide an explanation for the decline in the trust of institutions such as the American media, is that they go off and engage in the very behavior that is causing that decline. So as they brought on or showed the clip of a guest that was on the show previously to talk about the decline, what is the narrative? Well, the decline in trust in left-wing media, or the media in general, is because left-wing media, they speak to 10% of the audience, 10% of the left. And then it's just because they are, you know, insulting and condescending to those who don't share all of the viewpoint of that 10%. But that 10%, though, is better than right-wing media that only caters to 5%. You know, their views are only catered to half as many on their side. So, you know, the left-wing media is twice as popular in their viewpoints, but are only able to get a bigger audience just by not being insulting or condescending. But there is nobody for the working class. Yeah, there is. It's called right-wing media. It is for the working class. I mean, when you go through and you take a look at it, Fox News, you know, now I get it. A lot of people still have issues with Fox News related to the election. I do too. I don't really watch Fox News all that much anymore. And part of that is because I got rid of cable, and you can't watch Fox News without cable, you know, but you can watch Newsmax without cable, and other news organizations on the right without cable just by paying a monthly subscription. You know, but when I go through and I take a look at it, you take a look at Fox News, Newsmax, OAN, and their accuracy in their reporting, the truthfulness and the fact-based reporting is vastly more than on left-wing media, which is constantly not only lying to you, but gets caught on camera by Project Veritas bragging about how they lie to you, how they manipulate you, and that all their reporting is based off of achieving a political objective and not creating a well-informed citizenry. And so they want to say, oh yeah, there's a decline in media, but then they want to lie to you about why there's a decline in media. And those lies are what is causing the decline in media. I mean, it's like, do you not understand this? But they cannot allow any type of narrative, even when they have to go off and admit the failings of the left. They can't provide any narrative that gives any credibility or any truthful information that, yeah, right-wing media tends to be a little more honest. Or, you know, at least a little more honest, but in my opinion, a lot more honest. But when we go through and we take a look at the decline in institutions, and there is a decline, you know, and the CDC, the FBI, and the news media. Now, part of the reason for the decline is exemplified by CNN, by Don Lemon. And I was trying to debate whether to have this clip up front or have this clip towards the back, but I think it really highlights why the news organizations have decided to completely abandon journalism and as a result have decided that lying to you is the way journalism is supposed to be done now, that their goal is not to inform, but in order to be activists. And this clip really highlights that. So let's go ahead, clip two, Don Lemon.
Does Real America's Voice have any sort of political bias or agenda or anything like that?
What is the
bias? It goes to the bias of the witness, Your Honor.
The bias in what respect? I assume that people, as I come at the beginning, this is not a political trial, and I don't know how you would isolate a person's particular politics and determine that that person is going to evaluate the evidence one way or another.
Has he not done any background or research on this whole thing? It's not a political trial. Okay, maybe in one sense, but if...
Now, there's Don Lemon saying the quiet part out loud, that the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse is a political trial. It's not a trial based off of facts and evidence. It's not a trial based off of whether or not Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, went out and murdered someone or acted in self-defense. No, 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 no. It is all politics. You know, he goes out there and says, it's not a political trial. Well, you know, maybe in some one point of view, it may not be a political trial, but he's going off and admitting that this is a political trial, that the entire prosecution only brought its case to prosecute him, despite all the evidence, because of politics. And who was driving the political trial? Who was driving the narratives to try and push for this political trial? CNN, the left-wing media, that lied to you about every aspect of this case from day one. They lied to you about Kyle Rittenhouse transporting a gun over state lines. He didn't. He got the gun over in Kenosha. They lied to you about him having no connection to the community, that he just saw on the news that, you know, there was rioting and he went to another community in order to, you know, try and engage in a fight, to shoot protesters. Well, actually, it turned out he works there. His dad lives there. His aunts and uncles live there. He has spent some time growing up in the community, you know, while his mom lives on the other side of the border. You know, I live in a state where, you know, here in Iowa and next to us is Nebraska. If you take a look at Omaha and Council Bluffs, well, the difference between those two cities, you know, crossing over state lines is just crossing the river is all it is. And I believe that's like what maybe about the length of, you know, or the width of about 2 to 3 football fields. And that's crossing state lines. But I understand there was a more of a commute, but he worked in that community. He has family in that community. He's grown up in that community. He goes through and engages in cadet programs with the local fire and police departments. You know, he has very strong ties to that community. Right. And so they also lied about him just going down and gunning people down. And that wasn't the case. I mean, all the evidence shows that it was self-defense. But the media didn't care. They lied to you about every aspect of the case. And then during the trial, how much the media has lied to you, it became apparent. And even as the evidence has come out, people who have watched it have seen the video footage, have seen the evidence, the witness testimonies that all back up, even the prosecution's witnesses all back up Kyle's version of events. And they still lie to you. Why is that? Because it's not about the facts. It's not about the evidence. As Don Lemon just admitted, this is a political trial. A political trial because they are going after the Second Amendment, the right to self-defense. Meanwhile, they're not asking or bringing up the point about how so many of the rioters were bused in. You know, they came on bus from other cities, other communities, and other states into that community in order to engage in the riots. They're not talking about how the rioters were engaged in arson, looting, violence, vandalism. They're not asking, why were they allowed to get away with that? Why were the police told to stand down and let the violence go unabated? They're not asking why it is that some of these rioters were armed themselves. They want to make so much about Kyle Rittenhouse going around armed in the community, but they're not asking, hey, why are the rioters, if they are, you know, engaging in a peaceful protest or a mostly peaceful protest that somehow involves burning things down, why were they armed? And you notice how some of them that were armed were felons possessing a gun illegally. And for the anti-gun crowd, someone possessing a gun illegally, if they are burning down cities in the name of a left-wing cause, oh, no, that's not a problem. Someone being armed in order to defend themselves, that is. And so we go through here and we take a look at the media, and I'll touch more on the whole gun aspects and the media's, you know, narrative and how it is they're trying to shift the narrative a little bit. But we go off and we see more dishonesty from the media as well. As we go through here, by now you've probably already seen this particular tweet from CBS Mornings. You know, where they go off and said Kyle Rittenhouse testified in his own murder trial yesterday, breaking down into tears as he told the jury he murdered two men at a Black Lives Matter protest last year in self-defense. Now, this tweet is absurd. First of all, you can't say that someone admitted to murdering people in self-defense. Murder, self-defense, two very different things. You can't have both of them at the exact same time. Secondly, Kyle Rittenhouse never said anything about murdering people. He said he just wanted to stop the attacks on him, that he was defending him, that he wanted to stop them from killing him. Right? And so they go off and they try to twist and bend his words of, hey, I just wanted to get them to stop attacking me, into he admitted to killing two people, and then keep bringing in the Black Lives Matter, you know, protest aspect of this, which was not a protest. It was a full-on riot and acts of domestic terrorism. But they keep on this because they want to be able to go through and find a way to bring a racial angle into a situation that involves people all of one particular race, which in this case is a white man versus white attackers. But they have to be able to find a racial angle into this. And then we go back and go, why is there such a decline in trust in American institutions? Because they keep lying to us. They keep trying to gaslight us. They keep going off and promoting narratives that are completely debunked by anything, by all the facts, evidence, forensic evidence, video evidence, witness testimony. It's all debunked, but they keep pushing that narrative. And so, yes, we've all seen by now, you know, people going on Twitter and going, wow, I just found out that the people that he shot were all white. I thought they were black. You know, and this is the problem with the media. They lie so much. They promote so much false narratives that there is a large group of people that had no idea what the case was, what actually happened before they started watching the trial. Because what the media reported and what was being seen at trial through all of the evidence that was submitted bared no resemblance to each other. And so they are just finding out what actually happened for the first time after being lied to for over a year by the media. And you wonder why there is such a decline in trust and faith in our news organizations. Now, of course, as the narrative has been collapsing on the left, as they have been, you know, humiliated once again, being called out because they were probably hoping that this would never actually go to trial, that Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, would probably just take a plea deal and none of the evidence would really ever come out. But now that the evidence has come out, people have watched the trials. People have looked at the evidence, you know, going straight to viewing the trial rather than just waiting on the media to tell them what to think actually happened instead of waiting for the media to lie to them about what happened. Well, now, as they brace for the undeniable that Kyle Rittenhouse will be acquitted of the charges. Heck, even the prosecutor is admitting that the Kyle Rittenhouse will be acquitted by now trying to ask if he could change the charges to seek lesser charges, because he knows that the current charges have no chance in hell by the jury. So now that they're going off and they're trying to create a narrative as to why Kyle Rittenhouse, despite all of the lies that was promoted by the media, is not going to be found guilty. And as they are going through, they are now even shifting to saying Kyle Rittenhouse is a victim, not a victim of the rioters, but a victim of the right, violent, right-wing extremist messaging. That's the problem. That's why Kyle Rittenhouse went and shot people. So here is MSNBC going off and trying to make the case, trying to shift the narrative, and tried to blame right-wing extremism, the right-wing view of supporting the Second Amendment. Take a look for yourself. You'll get a laugh out of this.
That's a message that was being pushed to a 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, a child. He heard warnings about the boogeymen of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and he took this illegally acquired assault weapon, which he admits not for hunting or for home defense. And he throws himself at the fray in Kenosha. And he kills two people. The boy who killed people, is then celebrated by the same pro-gun law and order culture that produced him as a hero and a martyr. And he's bailed out with the help of right-wing activists, and he poses for a photo grinning in the t-shirt of a long gun-themed coffee company that then courted controversy from the right when it distanced itself from this person, this boy who'd killed two people accused of homicide. There's a legal question before the jury right now of Kyle Rittenhouse's guilt or innocence. It's being determined, will be determined. From what I've seen, I think it's pretty likely he'll be acquitted, honestly. There's also the broader question of what kind of society we want to live in. Ask yourself that. If you're watching this and you're a gun owner or someone who considers yourself a defender of the Second Amendment, abstractly, right? Ask yourself, do we want a society in which political conflict is settled on the streets between people with guns?
Now, I don't know what it is about the left. Why it is they're in such competition to be the dopiest person on TV. So here it is. First off, he's admitting that Kyle Rittenhouse is likely to be acquitted. And even letting them know, or letting the audience know that this was a child, legally. At the time, this was a child. He is under 18, still considered a child. But in that, he's admitting that, hey, everything that we told you about the case and how he was clearly guilty and yada, 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 all that was a lie. You know, because everything that we've seen at trial, it turns out he's likely to be acquitted, and rightfully so. But then he goes off and he tries to say that Kyle Rittenhouse is a victim of extremist messaging about law and order. Wait a minute. Extremist messaging about law and order. I'm not quite sure if he really thought that out, but then again, maybe he knows his audience enough to know that just saying that the idea of law and order is an extremist messaging, that that's going to fly over their head. That's part of, you know, some of the things that the left-wing media does. It's their phraseology. that they use in order to manipulate their audience. But in the end, he asks us, what type of society do we want to live in? Even if you're a defender of the Second Amendment, what type of society do you want to live under? Where people may take to the streets and settle their political differences with guns? Really, you're going to be the one to ask that. You're going to be the one to ask what type of society we want to live in. So let's go back and take a look at this. So the media promoted a false narrative regarding a police shooting involving a black man, Jacob Blake, right, in Kenosha. They promoted a false narrative. They and the left incited people to violence. And rioters and all that came in from, you know, all different places, coming around on buses into the community in order to be violent. And so you have people who are engaged in vandalism, looting, arson, acts of domestic terrorism. And in that instance, because it was considered politically convenient, the political leaders of that city told the police, no, stand down. Let these people engage in whatever violence they want to engage in, unabated, leaving the community under attack with absolutely zero protection. Now, Kyle Rittenhouse, he didn't go there in order to shoot people or to try and enforce laws. No, he went there because he wanted to provide first aid service, basically acting as a medic. Now, we could talk about whether or not he has a license as a medic or he has some training, you know, but he went there with his first aid kit. And we saw throughout the night how, and throughout the day, that he was removing graffiti. That seems like, you know, someone I would like to have. That seems like the type of society I would want to have, someone cleaning up their community to make it look nicer. He was rendering aid to anybody who was injured, regardless of whether they were, you know, the violent rioters or whether they were injured by the rioters. He was going off and providing, with his first aid kit, help, and, you know, to get them out of the areas of violence, and, you know, with bandages and some kits, you know, and all that, to kind of patch them up, you know, kind of treat their injuries as little. That seems like the type of community that I would want to have. You know, the type of society where someone is trying to help those who are being attacked and injured. So, yes. But then they ask, why was he armed? Why was he armed? Well, why? You might as well be asking why a medic on a battlefield in the military is armed. They're not there to engage in the fight. They're not there to shoot and kill people, but they are still armed in order to be able to protect themselves should someone try to attack them while they are delivering medical aid to somebody. And so you're trying to ask why someone would feel the need to be armed in an area where violent rioters are attacking people and setting things on fire. And by the way, those rioters themselves were armed with guns and other weapons as well. He had the right to defend himself. And so we see here in what type of society that we want to have, you know, in the larger aspect. Do we want a society where, you know, according to the left, you know, if they don't agree with something or they want to force politicians to bend to their will, that they will take to the streets, you know, vandalize, loot, and engage in arson, and do that unabated while the police are told to stand down and let them do it, to basically allow the left to burn down your communities without any opposition, should they not like the decisions that you make? Is that the type of society that we want to live in? Why weren't the police allowed to do their job? Why were the police told not to protect their community? And so when a community is under attack and the government refuses to provide protection for that community, of course, we want people in society, and this is one of the reasons why we have a Second Amendment, who will step up to protect and defend their communities. Now, people want to go off and talk about whether he's a hero, whether he's not a hero. I would say, you know, that as far as it goes, he was who America was meant to be. When we're under attack, our communities are under attack, and law enforcement is either unable or unwilling, you know, unable because they don't have the manpower, or unwilling to protect the community, the members of that community are supposed to be able to rise up and protect their community themselves. Right? This would be a completely different story if the police were actually able to do their job and protect the community, but they weren't. And so, what type of society do we want? Let me guess here. Do we want a society where violent terrorists can attack and burn down communities unabated, and you're told to just roll over and take it? Or do we want a society in which, when our communities are under attack, there are people that will step up, whether that's to provide medical services or whether to provide security for their community until government decides that they will step in to protect the community, or until everything's under control where the government can actually handle what is going on? Me, I prefer to have a society in which people of a community have the ability to defend themselves when they're under attack. Now, to go further into this whole idea of what type of society do we want in the abstract? Well, let's take a look at this article from Breitbart here. And so, LAPD is advising city residents to cooperate and comply with robbers. Think about that. Cooperate and comply with robbers. And so the article goes on here. The LAPD then uses the release to outline 7 points conveying the department's advice for what city residents ought to do in response to robberies. You know, these are robberies in which people are following some people home, and then once they unlock the door to go inside, the robbers then attack, as well as being robbed on the street. Point 5 of the release says, if you are being robbed, do not resist the robbery suspect. Cooperate and comply with their demands. And quote, be a good witness. Be a good witness. California is one of the most stringent gun control states in the union. The state has had universal background checks and an assault weapons ban since the 1990s. Now, there's a great video that I found on Breitbart's YouTube channel that really sums up very clearly what's going on in LA. And then I'll bring it around after the video to tie it in to Chris Hayes's question when talking about Rittenhouse case about what type of society do we want to live in, in the more abstract, and how it relates to the Rittenhouse case. So this is clip 4.
California has universal background checks, an assault weapons ban, gun registration requirements, a red flag law. They have a 10-day waiting period on gun purchases. They have a good cause requirement for concealed carry permit issuance, which means you can't get a concealed carry permit in the state unless you convince law enforcement you have a good cause for carrying a gun. In other words, you have to show them that you're in dire need for having a firearm with you to defend yourself. It's the only way you can get a concealed carry. All right. Now, even if you have a concealed carry, they have a ban on campus carry. You cannot carry a gun on campus for self-defense. They have a ban on K through 12 teachers having firearms for classroom defense. In addition to all this, they have ammunition controls. You have to go through a background check to buy bullets in California. And the only place you can legally buy them are from in-state vendors who are approved by the state. Whew. That's a lot of gun control, folks. And despite all of it, the LAPD is warning that violent street robberies are surging. And what they're telling city residents to do, comply. Don't fight back. If you're being robbed, give them what they demand. Here's a quote. This is a quote from the LAPD. Cooperate and comply. Think about that. If you're being robbed, don't fight back. Cooperate and comply.
So think about that. In LA, they've implemented all of these gun controls. In California, they've implemented all of these gun control measures, what they want to promote nationwide. And they do it in California, and they have a lot of these laws in other left-wing cities and states. And what we have seen is that there is a surge in violent crimes in those states, a surge in robberies, because gun control is all about disarming the law-abiding citizens and empowering criminals. You want to be able to stop crime, you got to make the criminals afraid to commit the crimes. But when they know that their target, the people that they plan to victimize, is unable and incapable of defending themselves, it emboldens them. But if they go around and they look at people and they realize that anybody that they try to target, to victimize, may potentially have the guns and be able to fight back, well, that kind of goes through and creates a disincentive. It increases the risk. But then when you go off and you say, okay, we're going to disarm the American public, the law-abiding citizen, and then we're going to tell them that if a criminal approaches you, don't fight back. Cooperate and comply. And then they try to say, be a good witness. You know, so cooperate, comply, pray that they don't kill you so that you can't identify them later. And you wonder why there's such a surge in crime. And then, of course, with the added on defund the police movement, even if you do be a good witness and report the incidents to the LAPD or to the police, they don't have the ability to really do anything about it. There are so many crimes. They're understaffed. They're going to basically say, well, someone broke into your house and stole a few things. Well, that is low priority compared to everything else. So you're disarmed. The police are telling you that if someone robs you, cooperate and comply. And then even if you report it, the police have no ability to actually do anything about it, because they don't have the manpower, the resources. And with such a surge in crime, that things like robberies just doesn't take the priority list. So even if you're a good witness, it just ends up as a file put away and they don't do anything. And so they've empowered the criminals by disarming you and then telling the criminals that, well, we're telling everyone to just give you everything that you want, and we don't have the police manpower to actually do anything such as go after you and arrest you. So guess what? It is Christmas for criminals. Everywhere, every day, it's Christmas for criminals. And then we get back to Chris Hayes's question here. What type of society do we want to live in? Well, if you take a look at what Chris Hayes is promoting and advocating for, he wants to live in a society that is a gangster's paradise. Now, if it wasn't for copyright issues, I'd play Coolio's Gangster's Paradise song, but I'm not able to put that in because of copyrights. But that's what he wants. Criminals get free rein. As long as their criminal activities or groups engaged in criminal activities are likely to vote Democrat and support Democrat activities or policies and are on violent rampages to support Democrat policy agendas. Right. So let me ask you, Chris Hayes, what type of society do you want? One in which criminals are able to freely roam around, victimizing anybody that they want, knowing that those people are not able to defend themselves, but also told to just comply and give criminals everything that they want? Think about what type of society that is. That seems like a society dominated by warlords. That's what we see in third world countries, where the cartels are the ones actually running the show. And that people have to, are back in the early, 20s, where the mob was running places like Chicago, and then you had competing mobs, and the mob would go off and start vandalizing or harassing people or attacking people unless they paid them protection money. And maybe that's one of the easiest ways to explain this. Basically, Chris Hayes is advocating for a society run by a bunch of mobs that are going around knowing that you are defenseless, demanding that you pay them protection money and give them everything that they want, or they're going to violently attack you and you can't do anything about it, and the police are told, just let them attack you. Or do you want a society in which law and order prevails, where the government fulfills its constitutional responsibility to provide protection to the community through the police force? Do you want a society where when violent mobs, domestic terrorists, are attacking your community, vandalizing, looting, burning down your homes and businesses, and the police aren't there to be able to protect you, or they don't have the staff to protect you, do you want a society in which people have the ability to defend their lives and their communities? I tell you what, Chris Hayes, I prefer a society that has law and order. When people are terrorizing a particular neighborhood, that the police will step up. I prefer a society in which people have the ability to defend themselves when the police either cannot or will not fulfill their obligation and role. So when I take a look at society, I take a look at our founding fathers. I take a look at the Constitution. And Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, I'm not going to go off and say he's a hero, but I'm going to go off and tell you that he exemplifies the type of society that, yes, I would want to live in, where we have the ability to defend ourselves against violent extremists attacking our communities. I do not want to live in the society that Chris Hayes wants, where violent mobs, extremists, domestic terrorists can come rampaging through a community unabated, supported by law enforcement, not doing anything, refusing to enforce the law, where they can come in, demand you bow down to their every demand, or they will burn down your community and not face any consequences. That's the type of society that Chris Hayes is advocating for. And we see this across the country. The more gun control laws there are, the more crimes there are. And Chris Hayes and his network that he is on is constantly inciting violence, provoking the mob, giving them cover, and then attacking the police should they actually protect a community from arsonists. Yeah. I mean, this is, and then you wonder why at the beginning I started off with why there was such a decline in faith and trust in the media. Well, it is absolutely no wonder whatsoever because the media is disgusting. The media has decided they want to collapse the country. And this is the goal of the media and the liberal elites. They want to create such chaos, such pain and suffering, even if they have to lie in order to incite people to violence, so that they can declare, you know, that the current government has failed, you know, the Constitution has failed us, you know, democracy, capitalism, all of that needs to be torn down, and we need to rebuild the country with nothing but left-wing ideas, you know, a left-wing paradise like Venezuela. You know, a society based off of class where they are at the top and the rest of us only exist to serve them, to feed their ego. This is absolutely disgusting. I mean, how MSNBC or most of any of the liberal networks have any audience whatsoever is beyond me. The only people tuning into these stations at this particular point are people who are going there specifically because they want to be lied to. And it doesn't stop there. You know, as much as there's been a decline in faith in the CDC, the FBI, and the media, there's also a decline in faith and trust in institutions like the public education system. Why? Because the public education system is going out there and they're promoting Marxist ideology, attacking American values. They're going out there promoting racism, teaching kids to hate each other. And then they are lying to the parent about what it is that is going on in the schools. They are covering up rapes based off of the hierarchy of the victim group. Sure, if a woman is raped by a man, sure, they'll report that. But if a woman is raped by a transgender, they must cover it up because the transgender person is ranks higher on their hierarchy than just a woman, so they must cover it up and protect the transgendered person from facing any consequences for the crimes that they are committing, or whether they are gender fluid or whatever the case is. I can't keep up with the insanity of the left. Well, as you know, parents have been speaking out at the school boards, and that the current Democrat administration has decided, well, we can't have parents actually having any say in what goes on in their kids' lives. So we find out that the school board worked with the White House to draft a letter to send to the White House to ask them to invoke the Patriot Act to target and harass parents, trying to call them domestic terrorists. And that part of this comes out as a father went to the school board, outraged at the fact that his child was raped, and the school board went to cover it up. So, yeah, sorry about the interruption. One of my kids needed something. I had to go cook lunch. So that kind of disrupted the flow of the podcast, but here we go, here we continue. So we have parents that are outraged about what the school board and the schools are pushing onto their kids, you know, teaching them to be racist and to hate each other, and even going so far as to cover up rapes and sexual assaults against students if, based off of their assessment, the student being assaulted is lower on the hierarchy of importance than the person committing the assault. And so parents are naturally outraged by this. And of course, the administration, you know, the Biden and the Democrats, are weaponizing the FBI to target and harass the parents, saying, hey, you will shut up. How dare you expect that as parents, you have any say over how your kids are raised? Any say over what it is we tell your kids to believe? Well, now it's just as bad is that the school boards are not just waiting on the FBI to target and harass parents. The school boards themselves are targeting parents and collecting dossier on parents that they claim will be problematic. You know, if parents show up at a school board and voice their disagreement with what the school board is doing, with what is being pushed onto their kids, those parents are going to have the school boards, those school boards are going to start collecting information and investigating those parents in order to try and dig up dirt on them, in order to threaten, silence, and blackmail them into shutting up and being quiet. And so here is one parent that that has happened to that is speaking out. Here we go.
Well, we found a digital dossier of more than 50 parents in our community, myself included, with divorce decrees, mortgage documents, background checks, social security numbers. It was really terrifying.
Let's pop up on the screen some of the items to, in addition to what you just mentioned, the contents of this dossier. You mentioned the background, the bankruptcy filings, family trees, background checks, things of that nature, court case summaries, hidden camera footage of conversation with parents, phone numbers, addresses, screenshots of text message conversation. I'm just curious, why would you be tracked?
Well, I became an advocate for increased transparency within our district, and I became a vocal advocate for parental rights in education, and that made me a target.
And let me just point this out, Chris Hayes. This is also not the type of society that I want to live in. Beyond the violence, beyond the domestic terrorism that the left wing is engaged in, all while claiming to be protesting, I also don't want to live in a society where parents are told they have no authority, no rights, no say over how their children are raised, where parents are targeted and harassed by both the school boards and the federal government if they dare speak out in disagreement with the political agenda of the schools, with the teaching kids to hate each other based off of race, the indoctrination and the promotion of mental illnesses as something to celebrate and that everyone should participate in. I do not agree with that as well. I do not want a society, Chris Hayes, in which school boards are covering up sexual assaults and rapes because they have a hierarchy of who is more important than other people based off of their claimed victimhood status. I don't want to live in a society, Chris Hayes, where the government feels that they can mandate that I take whatever injection they deem necessary for me to take, especially while at the same time telling me that I'm not allowed to know what's actually in that injection, what it's made up of, and how it was created. So no, Chris Hayes, this is not the type of society that I want to live in. This is the totalitarian, authoritarian, Orwellian society that you want, where you either take a knee, bend over, or roll over for whatever the left wants to do. And if you don't, the federal government will harass you, the school boards will harass you, and the violent domestic terrorist groups that the left has been using forever, whether it was way back, you know, 100 years ago now, when they were using the KKK to terrorize communities, or whether it's today's Black Lives Matter. It's all the same. It's all the same. So, no, this is not the type of society that I want to live in, and this is why I thank God that our founding fathers were smart enough to have a Second Amendment so that we would be able to rise up and defend ourselves. and why it is that we have the First Amendment so that we can speak out. We're supposed to be able to speak out without fear of the government retaliating, but the government feels the need to retaliate and use paramilitary organizations, or basically engage in using their positions in order to try and blackmail people into shutting up and just accepting whatever the left wants to do. Now, there is more here that I want to cover, and I'm going to cover a lot more in the audio version of the podcast, but there is one other thing that I want to talk about. You know, some of the spin that is going on and some of the left-wing, you know, social influencer space. You know, and this one coming from Secular Talk, who comes up with, you know, a study that was done over why people voted the way they did in Virginia elections and what that means. And as I look through this, there's a few things here that don't make sense. So let's go ahead and take a look at the clip as he goes through and tries to explain the study, and then we'll break it down.
So here you see what Michael says. A focus group of suburban women in Virginia who went from Biden to Youngkin. It's clear that it's the culture war where Dems are losing voters, not policy that is, quote, too progressive, as mainstream media hacks want us to believe. And then you can see there it says, we ask which party has better policy proposals. Democrats, 54%. Republicans, only 14%. 32% say it's about the same. Those 32% are hilarious. Then we have which party has cultural values closer to yours. 61% say Republicans, 22% say Democrats, and 17% say about the same. See, this is interesting, guys. This is really interesting. I've never seen a better example of like what I've been yelping about on this show crystallized into one very clear package. Because the fact of the matter is this. And Jacobin just came out with a study that found the same thing. You know what the most popular ideology is and messages? Progressive populism.
Now I gotta say, this makes absolutely no sense to me. All right, so let me get this straight. Two-thirds of the respondents want to go off and say, we agree with Republicans on culture, on cultural values, cultural norms. But we just don't want those values implemented in policy? How do you separate culture values and, you know, the culture wars from policy? Culture shapes policy. So I'm really kind of confused how they came up with this type of disconnect between culture and values, and makes me really wonder how they did the survey, how they conducted this study on why people voted the way they did, if they get the idea that, hey, we like the values, we just don't want those values implemented in policy. I don't get that. Secondly, when you go off and you take a look at left-wing policy, they really don't have a policy. Their whole policy is lie and bribe. That's it. Lie to the American people about what it is they plan to do, and then try and bribe people for votes. And so when you go off and you take a look at the, quote, policy of the Democrat Party, what is it? It's to bribe you. It's to say, hey, let's go off and do a study on the popularity of Democrat policies. Hey, the Democrats want to give you money every month, a universal basic income. Do you support the idea of the Democrats and the government giving you more money? Who's going to say no to that? If that is the totality of the question, who's going to say no to that? Do I support someone giving me more money? Of course. You know, or hey, the Democrats want to go off and give you more money for childcare. You know, do you support the government giving you more money if you're a parent for childcare? Oh, you want to give me more money? Of course I support that. I mean, that is the totality of the question. But if you give the parents, these people, more information, then their response changes, such as, okay, would you support the government giving you an extra $1,000 a month? But in doing so, they destroy the purchasing power of the money. And so inflation will increase, right? Do you think they would still support it? Or, hey, you know what? We're going to give you $1,000 a month. But in doing so, the cost of living will go up $1,200 a month. So while your bank account may have more money in it, the purchasing power buys less stuff. Do you support that? You know, and you could point out, you know, Venezuela, they printed more money. They printed more money such that people pretty much became millionaires in their own currency. And yet they were broke. They couldn't afford a loaf of bread. You know, they went off and they were bringing in wheelbarrows full of money piled high, thousands upon thousands of, I don't know, whatever dollars are in their own currency. You know, whatever their currency was. But I'm just going to say dollars, even though that's not their currency. But, you know, just thousands of dollars being wheeled around in wheelbarrows in order to afford maybe one cup of coffee, right? Would you support the government giving you thousands of dollars a month if that caused causing a cup of coffee to go from $5 at Starbucks to $1,000 at Starbucks, or from $5 to $700 at Starbucks? Would you still support that? Well, obviously, the answer changes as you get more information, because what they are relying on is the idea that people will believe that the government can give them an endless supply of cash as much as the government wants, and there's no consequences to it. And that's what they are relying on in order to get the results that, hey, while people support Republicans on a culture, they support Democrats on policy. Well, the only reason why they would support Democrats on policy is because they are being lied to about what the policies are, and they're just being asked, do you want more money, without being told what the consequences of giving them more money from the government would be. I mean, you take a look at Bidenflation right now, right? You take a look at all of the spending that has gone on between the stimulus packages, the increase in the child tax credit, which is being paid out monthly right now. I believe it's got this month and next month. That is being paid out monthly. And then you got the infrastructure bill. And as a result, we have inflation at 30-year highs because of all the money that they are spending and injecting into the economy. If you put that into perspective, and then you told people that, yes, the government or the Democrats' policy is to give you more money, which you support, but if that makes Bidenflation worse, so that all that extra money affords less, do you still support it? Well, the answer would be no. The answer would be no. And so what this study actually shows me, when you take a look at the alignment of culture, right, is that the Republicans, that people support Republican values, conservative values, norms, and cultural values by two-thirds. An overwhelming two-thirds majority support Republican. It's just somehow there is a disconnect between how culture translates to policy, and a disconnect between taking a look at the policy's stated effect and taking a look at what its actual secondary effects are. So, yeah, but this whole disconnect between culture and policy, I don't understand. But when I take a look at this survey results, it just shows that people support, when they are informed and know, support by a two-thirds majority conservative values. And that it's only through a lack of information or being completely lied to that gets people to support Democrat policies and values. So this is why, you know, taking this into the larger context, this is why the Democrats are so heavy in on censorship, why the Democrats are coordinating with Facebook and Twitter to censor the internet, because they can't let the truth get out. They can't let facts and data to get out, because the more informed people are, the less they support Democrats. This is why they are nominating someone to the FCC who wants to take conservatives off the airwaves, revoke their broadcasting license, so that people don't have access to what the facts and the data are. Because that's the only way the Democrats can survive as a political party, by being able to lie to you without any interference in that lie. All right, so that's it for this episode. I'd like to thank you so much for watching on Rumble. Yes, Rumble, where this video will be released first. right? And then, of course, there's the audio version of the podcast, the Jacob Johnston Show. Just go to wherever it is you get your podcast. Look for this cover art, and you can listen to the audio version of the show. Now, after it's released on podcast and Rumble, it will then be released on YouTube and BitChute. All right, so don't forget to smash that thumbs up button, leave comments down below, share this around. If you're listening to the audio version, don't forget to leave me a rating and review. Thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.